number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D here on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us, continuing through the night here on YSR. And a busy weekend, the draft, the playoffs in both the NBA and the NHL, Major League Baseball, and NASCAR had their race at Talladega, which was a demolition derby. Man, a lot of stuff to digest. But also there was news in the NBA as the Lakers got their guy in Luke Walton, 36 years old, son of Bill Walton, played for the Lakers. He is now in charge of one of the more iconic sports franchises. We'll get to why Luke Walton was the right pick for the Lakers coming up. But again, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number you want to join in. Also hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Let's go to James in Indiana who wants to talk about that demo derby at Talladega. What's up, James?
Good morning, Tony D. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. It's been a good night so far. I'm feeling good.
Well, it was quite a weekend down here in my neck of the woods. We had a web.com tour.
Oh, no, you don't. You're not going to give me web.com tour updates, are you?
No, It was a financial shot in the arm for the tri-state area.
Oh, okay, that's cool. I mean, that's cool.
Tell you. Right. It was a good event, and a good time was had by all.
All right, but you wanted to talk NASCAR, so I want you to talk NASCAR.
Oh, yes. I saw the highlights. OMG.
There were 35 cars in the field that got in an accident. 35 cars got in an accident at Talladega. This is like a carnival ride. This isn't a race. This is a carnival ride.
Oh, my goodness. Did you see how many cars went airborne?
There were guys airborne. There were guys flipping on their hoods. I mean, it was a mess. It was a mess. Listen, my daughter doesn't know anything about NASCAR, but there was one accident. She came downstairs. She looked up at the TV, and she went, "What is that?" And I went, "Oh, yeah, it's just a NASCAR race, honey." She asks, "Does anybody die?" I go, "No, they're not dead. It's just bad. It just looks horrible." But no, it was a mess. It's like Talladega. It's like cross your fingers, man. You're on that racetrack, flying around at 200 miles an hour. Restrictor plates all keeping you close together. Anybody bumps anybody, it's like just this big melee of a crash fest.
All I can say is four words: thank you, Mr. Earnhardt.
Oh, yeah, because everybody walked away.
Absolutely.
That's right. Thanks for the call, James. Appreciate it. That's a very good point. We talked about that on the anniversary of Dale Earnhardt's death, how his death helped deliver some serious safety changes to NASCAR in design and walls and all that other stuff. And in that fact, all these cars that went airborne and were flying, and I think one caught on fire, and it was just, everybody walked away. Bumps and bruises, that was it. But of the 35 cars ended up in an accident of some sort. Only 21 finished on the lead lap that they hit Talladega. What a mess. All right, I told you earlier that there seems to be an issue with a 30 for 30 documentary on the New York Yankees Boston Red Sox playoff series. It's mostly focused on the Red Sox. It was called 4 Days in October. And in it, it talks about the Red Sox in the 2004 playoffs against the Yankees and, of course, winning the World Series and breaking the curse. And this documentary had, of course, a good segment of it involving the bloody sock game of Curt Schilling in Game 6 against the New York Yankees. Now, if you've been following some of the media stuff that's been going on in the world of Curt Schilling being fired by ESPN for a meme that he put out on the internet talking about the transgender bathroom issue that's been debated on the political side of things. Schilling was canned for that. He's been doing those kind of political things, and ESPN cut ties with him. And now Awful Announcing, which is a fine website, by the way, noticed that the Curt Schilling bloody sock game had been deleted or edited out of 4 Days in October when it re-aired over the weekend. And now people are wondering, is this rewriting history or is this a backlash against Curt Schilling? ESPN claims that no, it was just simply cut out because of time constraints. But I'm not buying this. I'm not buying this at all. I'm sorry. Curt Schilling's bloody sock game is one of the more memorable things out of the comeback that Boston made in that series against the Yankees in 2004. There's David Robert Steele, of course, and maybe you want to talk about the Johnny Damon Grand Slam in Game 7, but Curt Schilling's bloody sock was controversial. There were people who believed it wasn't blood. I mean, there was all sorts of different things that came out of that game. I think the sock was sent to Cooperstown It was kind of the symbol of the comeback that the Red Sox made. If there was one sort of piece of paraphernalia that was best described the four-game win streak of the Red Sox over the Yankees in that series, it was the bloody sock. Why would the documentary people that were in charge of re-airing this, why would they cut this out completely? There are other things that you could cut out. Probably some things that are more, you know, less relevant than the Game 6 performance of Curt Schilling. But if you fire Curt Schilling and you want to delete this out of the 30 for 30, that seems to make sense for me. So I'm wondering, like, if you're in the ESPN 30 for 30 offices, either own this or really show us, give us a better explanation as to why it was cut out. Personally, listen, I understand cutting stuff for time constraints. It happens all the time. You want to get something on the air. It's a little bit longer. These were documentaries. And when they were done, they were put in with a certain spot value. I mean, we were going to take breaks here, here, and here. When you re-air it, you may not have that luxury. So you do have to do some editing. I completely understand that. You know, if you take Ken Burns' Civil War documentary that was on PBS and put it in primetime, you're probably going to have to cut some things. You know, there's got to be room for commercials. There's got to be more room for commercials than was on PBS. If you ever watch 30 for 30, they rarely take commercial breaks. And they'll give you a good chunk of the documentary and then a break and then a really good chunk of the documentary and then a small break and then a good chunk of the documentary. When you do it on different other day parts, you may not have that luxury. This just seems fishy to me. I'm glad Awful Announcing and For the Win at USA Today pointed this out. But this sounds fishy to me. It sounds like there's some, you know, bad blood, not to use a pun here, between Curt Schilling and ESPN. And I think they were like, yeah, why give him the glory again? It's not like no one who was around is not going to remember because it wasn't in a documentary. It's if you want to research that, future generations want to research that, that'll pop up. But it just seems a little petty, and I'm just not buying the explanation. All right, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. All right, so the Lakers got Luke Walton to be the head coach. And in analyzing where the Lakers are, I think this is probably the most perfect hire that the Lakers could have. What are the Los Angeles Lakers right now? The Los Angeles Lakers are a team that is in complete and utter rebuild mode. Guys that are on the roster right now are not going to be on the roster in the future. They've got young talent. They've got draft picks coming. They've got some room to get free agents. What do you want? What do you want as a head coach? Well, if you're the Lakers and you're this iconic franchise, here's what you want. You want the best, sexiest name available. You want a coach that is going to get people genuinely excited. Now, the real basketball fans know that true excitement for the Lakers are a couple of years away. No one's thinking Luke Walton puts them in the playoffs next year. But you still want a buzz. You still want people going, yeah, you know what? The future's probably bright. Now, people may say, yeah, but Luke Walton, you know, he was with Golden State, the best team in the NBA. They did start 24-0, but man, look at all the players that he had. Yeah, but you know what? 24-0 takes coaching. 24-0 takes coaching. because you're managing some minutes, you're managing schedules, you're managing travel, you're doing all that stuff. You're making sure that the best team you have on the floor, that they don't get tired too easily, they don't get bored too easily, they don't lose rhythm. You are in charge of that as a head coach. Yep, players play, players make the shots, players really are the deciding factor, and coaching can only go so far. But I think if you go 24-0, you get a lot of credit for that as a coach. It's not just rolling out a bunch of players like fantasy basketball and letting them do their thing. You got guys on the road, tired, some need breaks, some don't. You're playing minutes, you're managing minutes, you're keeping everybody in sync. You're also pre-scouting and getting your group and team prepared. Luke Walton did a hell of a job, and the Lakers, where they're going, they need him. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Jeff Risden's going to join us in 15 minutes. RealGM.com will get his thoughts on the draft now that it's all in the books. Christian Hackenberg went to the Jets and they booed the pick. Nice job. But, you know, there's bound to be a couple of those. People going, what? Derrick Henry went to the Tennessee Titans. People were genuinely happy about that here at Nashville. Very just excited. I don't know what kind of pro Derrick Henry is going to be, but people were genuinely excited that the Titans were able to get him. And there were a couple like that throughout the weekend. Some surprises and some eyebrows raising, but that's the way the draft is. So we'll get an overview. Jeff Risden again, realgm.com on the NFL draft. Get back to the NBA playoffs. The Golden State Warriors took care of Portland in game one. No problem. They don't have Steph Curry. And as I said earlier tonight, the conversation should be about whether or not Steve Kerr is going to employ a strategy similar to what people suggested that he do in the Rocket series, which is, look, you've got a very good basketball team. You need Curry 100% for the Western Conference Finals and the Finals. So if you feel like you match up well with Portland the way it stands right now, and by any game one measure they do, then don't play Curry until you lose. Now, again, a series can't really be properly evaluated until both teams play at home. So this is just one game. Portland is going to make some adjustments. Defensively, Golden State was outstanding. Klay Thompson had like 37 points, and he played great defense. But Portland will make some adjustments, and then they'll get a game three at home. If you're Steve Kerr, do you just see where this series is going to head before you risk bringing Steph Curry back? Now, game three will be in Portland, and they asked Steph Curry if there is a chance that he plays in game three.
To me, they're pretty good, so I'll do everything I can this week to make that happen.
He's going to do whatever he can to make that happen. Well, that's his job. So sometimes you have to protect a player from himself. Now, will he be practicing on Monday? Here's Steph.
The way things are going, hopefully tomorrow I can get out and do some drills and get some shots up and then go from there.
All right. So Curry plans on practicing, plans on getting some shots in. He plans on trying to be available. He's doing his job. His job is to get better, keep pushing to see how far he can go, to see how far that injury will take him, and to see how quickly that injury does not affect him playing basketball. But again, sometimes you got to protect players from themselves, and you do not want Steph Curry at 65% mucking it up to pretend he's 85%, and then he gets hurt in a Portland series where you're up 3-0. That would be a waste. San Antonio right now is looking really, really good. Oklahoma City could turn that series around, and they would look really, really good. Here's Curry again. He wants to see, though, how this knee feels.
Doing a lot more rehab-wise and trying to test my body out a little bit. So I'm looking forward to getting back on the court and maybe a practice setting and seeing how it feels.
All right, now this must be killing him because the playoffs are an exciting time. You play 82 games to get to this point. You don't play 82 games to win 73. You play 82 games to get to this time of year. Just like it killed Kevin Love, just like it killed Kyrie Irving last year to be out for the postseason with injuries, multitude of guys who have had to sit out playoff games. This has got to bother stars, guys who want to step up for the moment, especially at home. I mean, it stings no matter what, but when you're home and the city is electric behind your game, and the whole city is at a standstill waiting for you to play your game, and you don't get to come out, and you don't get introduced, and you're not doing what it is you do best, I'm sure it drives Steph Curry crazy. But this is where Steve Kerr has to sort of step in and make a very, very difficult call, because Curry is going to beg and beg and beg to try to play. Curry does say whether or not he has full range of motion.
I got pretty much full range of motion back. It's still painful. But for the most part, I can get on my feet and start to do basketball activities that will get me back ready to get into playoff atmosphere.
Again, Steph Curry, and that's all courtesy of ABC Television, bringing us those cuts of Steph Curry on the sidelines, watching his team play and watching his team win and watching his team win pretty well without him. They can handle Portland. They can handle Portland. But looking ahead, the road is going to get a lot more difficult. But you know what? No matter how you slice it, this has really, really been weird. Sometimes you sense it in sports where sometimes a team just feels like everything's going their way. The Denver Broncos had this, right? Where the Broncos were rolling along with Peyton Manning not playing well, and you started to see a different aspect of their team, and you started going, oh man, they're winning games by returning interceptions for touchdowns and fumbles for touchdowns, and there's just this weird way they keep winning these football games, and Peyton Manning doesn't even look that good, and yet they find themselves still winning these football games. And then there is Manning throws five picks in a game against Kansas City, turns the ball over five times, Brock Osweiler comes in, he starts leading them to a couple of victories, and you feel like, wow, this has got special gear written all over it. And then they struggle a little bit, but then Manning takes the back over and he doesn't turn the ball over and things just sort of bounce their way and they win the Super Bowl. The Golden State Warriors, think about what they're running through in these playoffs, right? They get Steph Curry goes down with an injury, all right? He's hurt. The Rockets are the most dysfunctional team in the playoffs, and instead of trying to take advantage of that, they basically roll over and go, hey, why are we even here? We don't even really want to be here. Then everybody started noticing, hey, the LA Clippers could be a thorn in Golden State's side, especially if Curry's hurt. Look out for them. They're really playing good basketball right now. Look at the way Blake Griffin is playing in these playoffs. And then boom, he's out, Chris Paul's out, and boom, Portland wins that series. Now all of a sudden, Golden State is playing a team they really match up well against, again, based on what we saw in Game 1, without Steph Curry. So they don't need to rush Curry back unless, of course, they lose Game 2. So it just feels like things are still coming up Golden State and Golden State's way. They should have gotten a very, very tough matchup in the second round with the LA Clippers. That I really believe that a healthy Clippers team would have really pushed them, especially without Steph Curry. And instead, LA Clippers aren't around anymore because they got hurt and they were dealt a tough card. So I'm wondering if this is having that kind of year where no matter what's on the horizon, looks like Golden State is having that kind of year, quote unquote.
If the Warriors are up 3-0 and Steph Curry is very close to coming back, he feels fine. Do you play him in Game 4 just to get his legs under him?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see
maybe
that.
Like 15 minutes or 10 minutes.
I could see that. I would not throw him back in Game 2. I think that's insane.
Even three scares me.
And again, this is all, this could all be, hey, we got to throw it out there. Let Portland think about it. Let Portland prepare for it. I get the game.
Yeah.
I get the game. I understand how that works. And people have been doing, that happens all the time. But just on the safe side, if Kerr and Curry are thinking about getting him and rushing him back for Game 2 or 3 of this series, that's craziness. Craziness. Until they lose or are threatened, I'd keep Curry off on the bench. And again, you want to play him to get some rust off before the next series? Feel free. But after that, no. We'll break down the draft next.
Yes. Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us as we continue to cover the NFL draft from the weekend and the picks that occurred both Friday and Saturday. Jeff Risden joins us from RealGM.com to give us his take on what you saw and basically the analysis of teams in the NFL draft. How are you, Jeff?
Oh, it's great to be with you, man. It was a wonderful weekend in Chicago despite the pretty negative weather. Other than that, everybody had a really nice time down there.
All right, well, let's ask you this. In terms of the analysis of players that are coming and going, when you look at and analyze, what are some of the teams that had won the draft over the weekend?
Yeah, I really like what the hometown Chicago Bears did. I think they got a lot of really good players, notably getting Jonathan Bullard in the third round. There's a guy who's going to start for that team right away. They addressed their safety problem quite proactively and did a good job. I really enjoy what Buffalo did. They took chances on a couple of guys, you know, getting Cardale Jones where they did. But I think they got decent value and they made their team better with a lot of guys who were proven at the level of the game. So they stand out. Really the entire NFC North, really they all got a lot better this weekend. Green Bay, Minnesota did very well for themselves. I think the Detroit Lions did it in a bit different direction than most people expected, but I think they made themselves a lot better as well.
The Jacksonville Jaguars were a team that came in with a history over the years of not very good, but they keep getting these high draft picks. Overall, how did you think they did?
I love getting Jalen Ramsey. He instantly makes that secondary better. Even though he wasn't necessarily a playmaker at Florida State, he has playmaking tendencies. He's going to be a phenomenal addition to the back of their defense. I'm not crazy about the addition of Miles Jack. I'm very much against the stream on that. I saw a guy who, the only thing that I ever saw him really do at an NFL level in college was, yes, he's a phenomenal athlete and offers a lot of potential, but he didn't really do a lot with it at UCLA. Now, he did get hurt, and then there's that. How long are you going to be able to trust him on the field? So I'm a little down on that, but some of the other guys they got, Sheldon Day, Tyrone Holmes, those are guys that can play on that defense. They got better as well. And Brandon Allen is their future backup quarterback, the guy out of Arkansas, guy who really stepped up his game as a senior. I think he's going to make that team, and should Blake Bortles go down, I think they're in a little bit better hands than they have been in the past.
All right, Jeff, who are some of the teams that didn't do so well and some of the teams that may have whiffed on a couple of picks?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out what Philadelphia is trying to do. After getting Carson Wentz, I thought they would maybe, you know, try to do a little bit with their skill position players and do something. They took a lot of guys who were probably going to be available a lot later than what they chose them. And that doesn't represent good value for a new GM and a new team, you know, trying to erase the stain of a failed Chip Kelly regime. Other than their quarterback, who's a huge question mark, I'm not sure that they did a lot to help themselves. And then Atlanta, I was not a Keanu Neal fan. I make no bones about that. He was in my 160 overall range. And, you know, okay, you can overcome one bad pick. Then their second round pick, they took Deion Jones, a guy who was even lower. I can't fathom how their draft class is going to make a positive impact on this team right away. Yeah, I guess you can say Keanu Neal, he will make some highlight reel plays. But to me, he was so much like DJ Swearinger, a guy who made a ton of highlight reel hits, but also gave up as many highlight reel plays because he was in the wrong position and had his head down charging and just missed the point of attack. He doesn't have the personal foul issues, but man, that pick, it shocked me that he went that high.
Jeff, the Dallas Cowboys had 9 picks, and people were wondering if they were going to find the heir apparent to Tony Romo in that. They did take Dak Prescott. Did they find that guy there, or is this just sort of a stopgap measure?
He's got the potential to do it. It depends on how well they develop him, and some of that's on Jason Garrett and the coaching staff. I love the fact that they added Ezekiel Elliott at number 4. That's going to make whoever is playing quarterback, be it Tony Romo or Dak Prescott or somebody else in the future, better. The thing you can say about Dak Prescott, he's at least as good as Brandon Whedon was. And I think that's, they're at least treading water there. Let's put it that way.
The Cleveland Browns coming in, they've got this new analytics approach to it. Hugh Jackson is now the head coach. And people were wondering, are the Browns going to turn the corner in this draft from some of the sillier drafts that they've had in the past? Did they do that? Did they do a better job this year than in years past?
Their draft for me was kind of all over the place. I really liked the Corey Coleman pick. They absolutely needed a number one receiver. They also need a number two and a number three receiver, and they tried to get those guys as well. I think Ricardo Lewis, the player out of Auburn that they got, is a very interesting height, weight, speed specimen. Not all that sure that he can master the route running, but they have to get whoever is going to be their long-term quarterback weapons. And they gave Robert Griffin half a chance now with some of the additions they made. But, you know, Cody Kessler, that's not an NFL quarterback. He's not even a backup NFL quarterback in my eyes. So that one stung a little bit. I don't necessarily see Sean Coleman or Carl Nassib as guys that are going to crack that rotation at their respective positions anytime soon either. They were guys who produced well in college because they were football players but limited athletes. I really don't see them translating to the NFL. So a star-crossed draft for the Cleveland Browns.
What did you think of the Paxton Lynch acquisition by the Denver Broncos?
It definitely raised some eyebrows down in Chicago, I'll tell you that. Most people expected the Dallas Cowboys to be making that selection, or perhaps even the New York Jets coming back in and swooping in and getting him. That Denver took him, that's very interesting because most of the books said that he wasn't going to be able to start right away. And in Denver, his competition is Mark Sanchez, and that's not exactly, you know, for a Super Bowl champion to come back with Mark Sanchez as your starting quarterback, that's really iffy. Paxton Lynch, maybe he can be the guy who bucks the trend and develops quickly, but there's a whole lot to learn for him. I like the fact that John Elway was aggressive for it. Paxton Lynch is a guy who feeds off the confidence. The organization clearly has a lot of confidence and trust in him, and I think in the long term it's going to be a very good fit, but I'm just not sure that I don't think they're going to repeat, let's put it that way.
The selection of Christian Hackenberg by the Jets drew some boos. What did the Jets like in him?
That's a darn good question. I can't find anything that they would like other than freshman tape from 2 years ago. I happened to see him at Michigan in the 2014 season, and I watched the warm-ups, and he throws the ball so hard and so well. And then he went out on the field and stunk up the big house. He was awful. He was missing wide open receivers. He wasn't seeing them. He was running away from ghosts that were chasing him. And it only got worse over his college career. He was dead last in the FBS in third down conversion, or third down passer rating last year. I don't know how that's going to get a lot better in the NFL. He looks like he should be a franchise quarterback, but he sure hasn't played like one or acted like one. That one, maybe it will be a stroke of genius and he'll recapture what he had as a freshman when he was admittedly quite good, but man, I really don't see it.
The Tennessee Titans had the number one overall pick and then traded it, and in return they got a whole bunch of picks to play around with. General manager John Robinson now can start building a team around Marcus Mariota. Did they do a good job over the weekend?
Yes, they did. I love getting Austin Johnson and Kevin Dodd with some of their acquired picks. They built their defensive lineup quite a bit there. Jack Conklin is a guy that I'm not all that high on, but playing right tackle, he can be really good for their run game. He and Taylor Lewan are both nasty guys who get after it. So they upgraded the run game there, and that will obviously help the quarterback as well. Derrick Henry, put him running behind those guys? Yeah, you have to really like what they've done. They've got a great start to things. They added a whole lot of key players. Even some of the later guys that they took, you know, Kalen Reed, Mr. Irrelevant. There's a guy, I think he has a chance to be an NFL starter in time if he adds a little bit of bulk. He's a really good, talented player. So there's a lot to like about what the Titans have done.
I want to close out with this. Laremy Tunsil, and his day was just the most wild day in the draft. But in the end, do you think he straightens everything out and Miami gets a good player there?
God, I hope so, because he was a phenomenal talent on the field at Mississippi. If he can get it together, yeah, he's far and away the best offensive lineman in this class. Let's hope that he can put it behind him. Miami is an interesting place because they don't necessarily have a strong leader, and Miami can be a place where some bad things can happen if you're not on the straight and narrow. So I'm praying for him, but we'll see what happens. But, man, if he gets back even close to what he was, they got themselves a good steal there.
Jeff Risden, RealGM.com is the website on the NFL. Jeff, appreciate your time tonight, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up next, do the Dallas Cowboys have the heir apparent for Tony Romo in Dak Prescott? I don't think so. I'll tell you why next. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, the Dallas Cowboys did pick a quarterback in this draft. A lot of conversation about where are the Dallas Cowboys going to get the next Tony Romo, or the quarterback to take over for Tony Romo. Well, they went with Mississippi State quarterback Dak Prescott, and a lot of different kind of comparisons to Dak Prescott. It really matters who you talk to on whether or not Prescott, who he resembles. Some says, oh, he plays very similar to Russell Wilson, or, oh, when he was in college, he was like Tim Tebow. It depends on who you talk to. You get a different idea of where Prescott is. He's got a lot of positives. There are things to like about Dak Prescott. First of all, let me get to the Tebow notion. When Tebow played in college, he was in an Urban Meyer spread system that allowed him to run and throw and accumulate high statistics in both categories. Dak Prescott did the same kind of thing. He's a threat to run, he's a threat to throw, and therefore he was putting up a similar kind of numbers. He was creating that similar sense of buzz. So people around the SEC always equated Dak Prescott to Tim Tebow just because of, hey, Tebow would throw two touchdowns and run for three. Prescott kind of did the same thing at Mississippi State. But do not mistake the two. He's a much better passer than Tebow. He's much better presence in the pocket than Tebow. There's a lot more things to like about Prescott's pro potential than Tebow ever had. So that comparison is very, very misleading. And it really happened in Prescott's early years at Mississippi State. As he progressed, you heard a little of the Russell Wilson comparisons. But one of the things to like about Dak Prescott is he has grown, and his game has adapted in the years that he was at Mississippi State. He really has shown improvement in a lot of areas. But this is why I don't think he's the heir apparent to Tony Romo. I think he's too much of a project. And I think in the end, that's too much of a burden to place on a kid to take over the team. I think in the end, in the years that he's going to learn to develop this job, there is going to be somebody that's going to come along that's going to be able to play that position better. Prescott's got, you know, footwork that does need to be worked on. He has a tendency to throw to the receiver and not to open space where the receiver is going to be. In Mississippi State, they did a lot of short passes and whatnot. He had a hard time kind of throwing deep. I mean, he had a couple of guys he could hit downfield, but when he played really good defenses in the SEC that had some good coverage, he had a tendency to not be as good on those kind of throws. This means that these are the kind of things, this is the kind of repertoire you have to have when you're in the NFL. It doesn't mean you can't learn them, and it doesn't mean a good quarterback's coach can't fix some of the things that are wrong with you. I think in Prescott's case, I think as he's developing, I think there's going to be an opening to land another person to take over that job. I don't know if it's going to be in the draft. I don't know if it's going to be a free agent that comes available or whatnot. I don't know how it is, but I think he's too much of a project to be just throwing that burden on him yet. So is he going to be a good pro? I think he's going to be an okay pro. I don't think he's going to be a great pro, but I think there's going to be better players that are going to come along. And while Prescott has tremendous upside in a lot of areas, I just think this was a splash call. I think this was the Cowboys kind of reaching a little bit on Prescott. And I don't find any fault in it, because if you feel like you've got time and you got the right people in place, Prescott may pan out and pan out pretty good. I just there's not something in my brain that says Dak Prescott can be an outstanding quarterback in the NFL. I think he's too shaky on the reads. I think it's going to take a while for him to develop into a true NFL quarterback. He does do well on his feet. He doesn't automatically go to the run like you see guys in college that are able to do that. Guys in college that can throw and run, tend to go to the run when things break down rather quickly. Prescott's not really like that. He has gotten a lot better over the years, according to guys who cover Mississippi State. He's gotten a lot better at that. And that's the one thing you kind of heard in broadcasts. Like, if you watch Mississippi State during the season, broadcasters love to bring that up because it was one of the things Dan Mullen's coaching staff used to talk about all the time, right? Boy, he's really learned to do this, or he's learned to do that. So can he learn? Yeah, because everybody at Mississippi State says he can. But in the end, I think you are what you are. And no matter what you learn, you are what you are. And I think Prescott is not going to be the outstanding pro. And I think if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you've got to have an outstanding pro. So somewhere along the line, I think there's going to be another option for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. Because as much as I like Prescott as a player, I just don't see this. I just do not see a time where he is going to be taking over this team and being the guy that those of you who love the Dallas Cowboys are going to be cheering about. I think that's going to be somebody else. But, you know, if he's on your board at the time that they took him, I think it was, what, round four? I think it's not a bad place to go. I think he could be a fun, exciting backup. I think he could be a guy that does some pretty good things initially. But like anybody else who comes in with that particular skill set, there is a moment of adjustments and there's a moment of figuring you out. And when people figure you out, then they kind of take away those things that make you great. I think he's a little bit further from the Russell Wilson comparison than people are giving him. But I just think it's going to take too much time. And I think in the end, Jerry finds his guy somewhere else. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. You want to get your thoughts in on that. And how did you think the Cowboys, the Jaguars, Tennessee Titans did in the draft coming up over the weekend? Like I said, I didn't watch much of Saturday. My daughter was really interested in it because she kind of follows football. She's 9, and her Broncos won the Super Bowl. So naturally she thinks, well, the draft's got to be somewhat important. But, you know, I was trying to tell her, you got to keep up with this quickly. The picks on Saturday, they come fast and furious. And if you don't slow down, it kind of passes you by. And I said, and to be honest with you, you don't even know who half these players are, or heck, all of these players are anyway, but you still enjoyed the excitement. Coming up, what could happen to the Thunder if they lose next?